This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 7, Episode 23 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're going to be taking a look at Justin Lin's fifth movie.
For all practical purposes.
Yeah. Fast Five.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is,
yeah.
This is the fifth film in the Fast and Furious franchise. And yeah, it's quite an exciting movie. It's the third time that Justin Lin has worked in the franchise, and it stars everyone, and most of the people working behind the scenes are people who are going to be working with Lin on Star Trek Beyond, or who are working with Lin on Star Trek Beyond. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it came out in 2011, and you want to give a synopsis?
Yes, the gang is back, all reunited, and defying the laws of physics to pull off a heist against the most notorious bad guy in Brazil, and use that as a chance to get away clean and get out of the life that they have found themselves in, get back to the purer life of when it was simpler and it was just about racing.
Yes, yes. And I mean, the bad guy is played by Joaquin de Almeida, right?
And even if you don't recognize the name, you see him walk on screen, you're like, oh, bad guy. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Which it made me so happy because he was the prototypical, you know, Central American bad guy from 90s action slash thriller movies, you know, like Clear and Present Danger, you know, for example, and Desperado and stuff like that. So to see him here back on screen, it's just like, yeah, you know, because he should be in like every movie, you know.
I agree. The guy, he's a naturally charismatic actor, and he's the type of guy that's just so obviously he has so much fun playing the villain that like you can't, like even when he's playing a complete scumbag like he is in this, like you still enjoy his scenes because you're like, hey, you know, like you get a kick out of him.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, yeah. For sure. So yeah, it's more of a heist movie than anything. I remember hearing right before this movie came out that they were looking to sort of transition away from the sort of street racing side of things and making a more, as they described it, like Ocean's 11 style heist movies. And I think that this one definitely, I mean, I think someone was definitely like, we should do an Ocean 11 heist movie.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And it also takes the concept that sort of comes about in the fourth one where you see them start, you know, ennobling the characters. It goes even another step farther where they're committing their crimes just for good reasons. This, like, they're the Rock, you know, the Rock is in it and he's the federal agent pursuing them, and he actually has an exposition scene where he basically absolves them of any past sins, because he talks about, I don't get it, they steal gas and they give it to people, and he erases that whole first and second movie, and he's like, they're basically Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why am I chasing them? But I must.
Yep. It's not easy being the Rock. Yeah.
No.
So yeah, because of that, because of the whole Ocean's 11 aspect to it, you know, you've got the core from the first movie, which, you know, returned for Fast and Furious, you know, Vin Diesel, Paul Walker, Jordana Brewster, etc. But now, in order to accomplish this impossible mission, they bring in the rest of their team, everybody. Yeah. They bring in the people who were introduced in every movie, including Too Fast, Too Furious. You know, they bring back, Han Solo.
Yeah, that's true. Although technically, chronologically speaking, the fourth movie is where he was introduced, and the third, anyway.
Yeah.
We won't get into the chronology thing again.
Well, he was introduced in 3, but he shows up in 4. But it brings in elements which were established in all of the other movies, which I think is pretty awesome. And to create an ultimate team, a super Fast and Furious team.
The Avengers of Fast and Furiousness.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes.
So what did you think about Fast 5?
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. The laws of God, man, and physics fly out the window, and they just fully embrace the ridiculousness. I mean, like, this is a movie that roots everything in just enough reality that you can sort of keep up the suspension of disbelief. But, I mean, everything that they do is just, there's zero chance that it actually happens in reality. And that, like, that is what I love about this series, is it gets more and more comfortable embracing the ridiculousness, but not in like a, you know, not in like a way that makes you feel bad as an audience member. Not like, ha, this is ridiculous. Like, let's all just go have fun. We know that we're here just to watch a good time and have something exciting happen. And it's like, yeah, okay, I'll go along with that. And it even works in more the close range fighting, you know, more the hand-to-hand combat stuff. Like, there's an element that Lin seems to add each time. He had a rooftop chase at the opening of the last one, and so we have a rooftop chase on an even larger scale this time, but then we have a close quarters gun battle that turns into fist fighting. Like, it's just everything that you could possibly ask for in an action movie, with the exception of, like, fighter jets, mm-hmm. happens in this movie.
Yes. No, that's true. I mean, there's definitely, this is, I think, where it starts, an escalation in these movies, where they progressively become crazier and crazier and bigger and bigger. And I think it starts here with, you know, the idea of bringing everyone back, you know, and making, you know, a super team, making a Justice League of Fast and Furious people or whatever. And, you know, it's... you need to up the stakes. You need to do, you know, all that stuff. And I think it totally works a lot. I think that this is the best movie up till now. And I think that it's Justin Lin's best movie, period. I think that it's amazing. I think they finally cracked the code of these movies. You know, not that they weren't good before, but this is where it sort of like pushes it over the edge. You know, after Fast and Furious, I was just about done with the franchise because I just wasn't getting much out of it. And then when I heard the idea of it being sort of like more of a heist movie, I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting, because that kind of goes back to what I liked about Too Fast, Too Furious so much, you know? And, seeing this one, I was just like, yes, this is now, you know, like a legitimate action franchise, not just a movie about, you know, street racing, but it's like an action, you know, big budget action blockbuster franchise. And, you know, I mean, one of the things that they do, I think, in order to sort of add to that escalation is bringing in The Rock.
Oh yeah. Oh yes. You don't bring The Rock in unless you're really committing to it. Yeah, you know, he The Rock being in your cast is just an open declaration of you're just going to go crazy with everything. Absolutely.
And the fact that, you know, they were bringing everyone back, I mean, that's big enough as it is. You know, not that any of those people were super huge names. It wasn't as big of a deal as when, you know, they brought Vin Diesel and Paul Walker back for Fast and Furious, but still, you know, it's just the idea that they have everyone. They've got Tyrese, they've got, you know, Ludacris and all that stuff, and you know, Gal Gadot, even, you know, everyone, and Sung Kang. It's great to see all those people together, but then you're like, and The Rock, and it's like, whoa, you know. And of course, there's the moment which everyone was, you know, waiting for from the beginning. It's like, you know, you got to see The Rock and Vin Diesel fight each other, right? Hand to hand.
Yes, you do. Oh, yes, you do. Windows and walls and doors and tables and floors and wrenches. And oh, my goodness. It's so much fun.
Yes, lots and lots of muscles and everything like that. You know, people just
That's important to note too. Is The Rock naturally? He appears in his natural state, which is glistening and flexing in every single scene. And like he is, he's almost like, I almost want to give him hypertension medicine because it's like, okay, calm, just calm down just a little. Yeah,
and wearing, you know, an Under Armour, you know, like tech shirt. Is like skin tight, which I love here because he must have a contract with Under Armour, right? Because I've seen him wearing it in other movies. Like I think G.I.
Joe. I think Under Armour has a contract with everybody.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Was started by an alum of the college I went to. So
really?
Represent.
Woo.
Nice. Yeah. Baltimore company.
Nice. Yeah. No. Because like you see him wearing basically the same exact thing in like G.I. Joe, I think, is
yep.
the movie. I remember seeing it like, wow, he's wearing an Under Armour, just like camouflage Under Armour thing. But because of that, like he's got the Under Armour shirt and you can tell with his, you know, cargo pants and everything. And you can tell that like costume was designed from the ground up to make The Rock look as cool as possible, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
the
thing about it is being, you know, part of a, you know, law enforcement agency, it's essentially the uniform, right? So you've got everyone else on his team who's, you know, maybe not quite built as well as The Rock, and they're all
wearing
the
same. They have flak jackets. They have flak jackets, and some of them wear coats.
Some of them do. Some of them are wearing the same Under Armour shirt, but they're not filling it out quite as well. But, you know, it's all good.
They tend to carry things to cover up their chests and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. You know? But, you know, I do think that's pretty cool, and yeah. Just having him come on board, and he's great. I mean, he's really he's so charismatic. I've loved him ever since that documentary Beyond the Mat. Did you ever see that?
Is that the one? No, I'm thinking of Wrestling with Shadows. That was the Bret Hitman Hart documentary. Beyond the Mat.
It's
I want to say that I have seen it, but
it's like
I don't
like
remember,
Mick Foley plays a pretty huge role in it.
I know the one you're talking about. Yeah. Yep.
It's pretty great. And you see him in that and, you know, like, cause he's going to be wrestling Mick Foley at like WrestleMania or something. And it's just, you see like this strange dichotomy because he's like, he's just about to go, you know, wrestle Mick Foley and, you know, Mick Foley's kids and you know, wife are there and, you know, they know that it's going to be something which is going to be rather traumatic. So like beforehand, they're like, Hey guys, come over here. You want to meet Dwayne, you know? And he's like, hi guys. And he's like super friendly. And he's like, oh, your dad and I are going to have a fun time. And then it cuts to, you know, the two of them in the ring, like beating the crap out of each other with his entire family in tears, traumatized for life, you know? But it's pretty great. You know, I've always been a fan of The Rock. He's cool. He's a cool guy. He seems like a really good guy, you know?
You know what he does, and he's one of those celebrities that's relentlessly positive, and I've always liked that about him, is that he does, like, you don't read about him doing, you know what, this will seem like a weird comparison, but he's, for me, he's like Andrew WK, where it's like, he's always all about, no matter what, you know, I'm going to encourage people to keep plugging along and be their best. So yeah, all that just to say, I agree with you. But the thing is, we're sitting here, we're talking about The Rock, and what I definitely want to acknowledge is you're right. They bring back everybody, and they have this name villain, and they have The Rock come on board, but never at any point do I feel like any of these characters gets short shrift.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear who the main characters are. But I do think that this very much is something that applies in a positive way for Star Trek, in that it's always been a balancing act to get, you know, quote unquote, the big three and the ensemble feel done right while not losing sight of anybody's characters. And I think that Lynn very much demonstrates here that he can take a massive cast and you don't feel like anybody's left out or just there to be a face on the screen. Even the guy that they bring in from the first movie to get rid of, you know, they write him in to write him out, basically. Like, that guy, doesn't get short shrift. He even has a couple of good moments on screen. So like that's really cool. I think that's a real testament to Lin, is that he can juggle all of those characters and never lose sight of them. Like you very much have the sense of a director who knows where everybody is, what their place is in the story and the script and the pacing, and how to make sure that they flow organically and feel right.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. And, you know, it is a pretty huge cast. I mean, I definitely agree with what you're saying. You know, so much so that it's not like you feel like there's at any point a person who's just in there just to make a cameo.
Right.
And, you know, to speak to that, as someone who had only seen Fast and Furious one time, you know, a couple of years before this movie came out, when I went into this, I was not completely familiar with some of these characters, one of them being Gal Gadot's character. And, mm-hmm. you know, when I saw her in this, I just assumed that she was a new character. I did not know that she was from Fast and Furious. And, you know, she's completely, you know, realized probably even more so than she was in that first movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
And, I mean, the fact that they brought, you know, Sung Kang back too, I mean, I think is pretty great.
Yes.
You know, they definitely didn't have to do that. And, you know,
it's always a good idea.
I also just love, at this point, they're just like, we don't even care. We do not care, because at spoilers at the end of the movie where he's driving away and he's going off to somewhere.
She says to him, she says, like, weren't you going to Tokyo? And he goes, I'll get there eventually.
Yep.
It's like that's the ultimate like high five to the audience.
Yep.
Like he's not dead yet.
Yep, he's not dead yet. Yeah. I mean, he could very well come back for number six. You never know, right?
Yeah.
So I mean that's pretty awesome, you know. I think that you're right about that. And, you know, there's a lot of people who have talked about, you know, the idea that there's some similar thematic elements between the Fast and Furious franchise and Star Trek in terms of the idea of family and, you know, found family and that kind of thing. And I think that this movie here, Fast 5, is where those ideas really start to come into play rather heavily, you know? I mean, they're certainly there, you know, from the very beginning, but this and the idea of bringing everyone back and sort of making it a giant reunion and everything like that, I think it really kind of hits the nail on the head in this particular mm-hmm. case, you know?
Yeah.
And I think we'll see that build as well over the course of, well, I guess we're not covering the last movie, so next week.
Yes.
But yeah. So, I don't know. In addition to all of this stuff, you know, I think that it's interesting how his style has kind of grown and changed again. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked last week about how Fast and Furious feels like a different movie than Tokyo Drift, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's true here too.
Oh yeah.
You know,
sure.
I mean like in you know, Tokyo Drift, you've got, you know, the weird, different, hip, cool, maybe young, you know, sort of teen Spider-Man version of, you know, Fast and Furious, you know, if you want to, you know, call it that. And then in Fast and Furious, it's kind of a return to form, but, you know, refining what has come before and maybe, you know, making it a bit bigger, you know, faster, more intense or whatever. And here, I think there is, you know, that escalation that we keep on talking about, which makes it much more of sort of an action movie, you know, and it gets away from, you know, the realism, you know, that you were talking about with Tokyo Drift and the idea that it
right.
feels like there's physical cars doing physical things and not that much CGI or whatever. Here, I mean, you can tell that they did as much practical work as they could, but there's some things which just defy the laws.
They essentially, I mean, like if they would have been charged with war crimes if they had done these actual stunts, even in an abandoned city.
Yeah.
Like it's just not, you just can't do this. Like it's not physically possible.
Right.
But you know, it's still an amazing amount of, you know, there's a little kid in me that loves seeing destruction on that scale. You know, it's that little kid inside that you know, loved building the sand castle, and then when the waves came in, like running up to it and just like being Godzilla, just like arr, like it's just great to lay waste to it and watch it fall. It's so much fun.
And there is a certain amount of glee which is associated, you know, with the destruction in this movie, you know?
Yes.
It's not like, you know, say Man of Steel where you're like, oh my God, you know, everyone's dying, you know, and there's this kind of thought in the back of your mind. You know, here, I mean, it's you know, pretty clear that, you know, this is essentially like a victimless crime or whatever. You know?
Well, they make very certain to say that there's an actual line where they go, every corrupt cop in Rio is chasing you. It's like it plants that subconscious seed of none of the cops you see die are bad cops.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or I'm sorry. None of the cops you see die are good cops. Only the bad cops are dying.
Right.
This is so essentially they're actually doing like a civic duty for Rio by wiping out the corrupt cops. They're like Batman on crack.
Yeah.
Like it's just amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, how many cars they destroy and how many buildings they lay waste to is just an amazing thing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
But the thing is, they didn't shoot in Rio. Like they did some establishing shots in Rio, but I know that the favelas were shot in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
Like they rebuilt them because it was, the neighborhoods they were going to go to were too, I think they were too dangerous for them to actually like shoot a movie. And I think they redressed, at least for their base, like it was a part of Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
That they repurposed. So like the, you know, all of the establishing shots that you see of Rio and that's legit. But like, I know that for the rooftop chase that was done in Puerto Rico, and I'm pretty sure that the car chase was like a conglomeration of things, like you know, and digital manipulation. So,
yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's one of those things, you know, with it, as far as the destruction is concerned, which, you know, I heard about on a commentary for GoldenEye back, you know, like when I was in high school, where it's something that I never thought of and probably would have thought was stupid until I heard it sort of like verbalized. But like, there's that whole scene in GoldenEye where he's driving the tank,
yes,
through
the
city,
and
like
he busts through the wall. I remember that shot. That was a great shot.
And like the tank was like running over cars, like it'll like crush a car, and then you know, you'll cut to the car and see like, you know, two people jump out, like, oh my God, you know. And it's like, why would you have that? That's so, you know, weak in a sense, right? But you know, like Martin Campbell, who directed that movie, he on the commentary, he's like, you can't have anyone die in a scene like this because it's supposed to be fun, and if someone dies, then it's no longer fun, you know. So you got to have that shot of like the people jumping out of the car. You know?
You're getting a hard R at that point if you're actually killing everybody.
Yeah,
but the thing is, I think it also it very much gives the audience the out. Like they can. You can rationalize it in your brain as, you know, however many people you're comfortable with believing are destroyed in the collateral damage and still having the heroes be heroes, like it gives you the room to make that equation on your own. Because I remember reading, it was about the Far Side. He did an anniversary compendium some years ago, and he talked about the cartoons that he got the most. Now I should ask, you're familiar with The Far Side, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like the cartoons that he drew that he got in the most trouble for were ones like he showed this one of, it was a woman calling her dog, and you saw from inside the house and the dog's running for the dog door, and she had nailed the dog door shut. And he said that what he figured out with the letters that he got was you have to give the audience an out. They have to be able to tell them, like, nobody can look at that picture and think the dog got out of this okay.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, you have to give people the out. And I think that, you know, in GoldenEye, but also in this, Lynn makes sure to show people running out of the way, getting out of the buildings, not being hurt. And that gives the audience the out to you know, like allow the destruction without thinking upon the horror of it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah. So there were a number of Star Trek collaborators on this movie, future Star Trek collaborators. It's kind of the typical list which we've become familiar with, including, well, I mean, in addition to Justin Lin, you've got Stephen F. Winden back as the director of photography. Mm-hmm. He's very good, I think. The editors, well, Kelly Matsumoto is back, joining Fred Raskin and Christian Wagner, who worked on the last movie, but they're not working on Star Trek, but she is. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you've got your costume designer, Sonia Milkovic-Hayes, who's, you know, as we mentioned, did Insurrection and is doing Beyond as well. And the music is, again, by Brian Tyler, who did Enterprise. So, yeah, he really does have, like, a team now. You know, he worked with these people before. He's working with them all again. I think it's kind of great. I always love when filmmakers do that. And, I mean, one of the interesting things, which, well, we'll talk about that next week, I guess.
Okay.
I was going to say, one of the interesting things is, like, all of these people would return to work on Furious 7, even though he wasn't there, which is interesting.
Really?
Yeah. It's the same cinematographer, same editors, same everything.
I will be really interested to see how that plays then, because as I've been telling you, I'm sold on this series. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of the series now. And, I mean, but the thing is, at this point, and I know that, you know, I've got another one with Lynn to go, but, like, it has become his series by this point.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, this is Justin Lin's body of work, basically.
Yeah.
So I'll be very interested to see if that team comes back to work. Well, I mean, not if, but since that team came back to work on Furious 7, if how apparent it will be. Because we had that good question in the Babel conference about how can you tell a director?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's like, so I think that would be a great way for somebody to, if you're watching these movies, and I'll be right alongside with you, jump from 6 to 7 and say, okay, well, we know that this same support team is there. Can I tell that a different director is in the chair?
Yeah. And I mean, I'll be interested to hear what you have to say about it, because one of the things that I've thought of and I think of in relation to this franchise and everything is something which Kevin Smith has talked about on numerous occasions, but has brought up again in reference to the fact that he's directing an episode of The Flash, you know, mm-hmm. where he's like, these people, they do it on a weekly basis. You know, they all know their jobs much better than I do. And, you know, I was worried about coming in and doing this because what am I going to tell them? You know, like,
right.
You did a fantastic job, you know? He's like, because, you know, these people, it's such a well-oiled machine. You know, he's like, I could literally drop dead right before filming and they'd be like, oh, that's too bad. Anyway, so let's go shoot this scene. You know? And, you know, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what you think about that in relation to Furious 7, because...
Yeah, I think it'll be my first real test as your Padawan, if you will, to see if I have picked up the knowledge necessary to be able to tell these things.
Yeah, I guess just putting it out there, I'm not sure that I can in relation to this. It's strange.
Okay.
I mean, same writer, you know, who did, he's done everything since 2, you know, and everything like that. It's, I don't know. It's very interesting, but we'll see.
Cool.
We'll see.
Yeah.
So, in terms of Star Trek collaborators, it's quite possible that there's one more person who was in this movie who's going to be in Star Trek Beyond. And that could possibly be Sung Kang.
Could.
There was for First Contact Day, which, you know, props to Justin Lin or whoever in the movie camp who was like, you know what, let's reach out to the fans and say, like, hey, we know that a day worth celebrating for. I mean, it is basically Star Trek's version of May the 4th, right? Which don't get me started on May the 4th, okay?
No, no, no. It's not. It's Star Wars fan. It's the version of May 25th. But no. See, you know what? First Contact Day, and this is speaking as somebody who has Star Wars, that like every third blood platelet in my body looks like that logo. But May the 4th drives me nuts. At least First Contact Day has some sort of like story continuity that is a true. Like that's a true fan thing. Yeah. It's not just a play on words. It's like, no, this is when it's established the first contact happened. It's a much cooler fan day or whatever you want to say.
May the 4th. I'm sure I've said this before.
No, never.
What?
Never. Never. No, I no, may no.
I'm sure I've told this story numerous times before, but it bears repeating. My friend who is a huge Star Wars fan as well. I think it was the first time they did May the 4th, you know, he texts me and he's like, why is everyone saying today's Star Wars Day? You know, I thought Star Wars came out on May 25th. What am I missing? And I'm like, no, get it? Like, May the 4th be with you. And he's like, oh, that's dumb. Well, May the 25th be with you.
I'm like, yes. We're the Eastern Orthodox Star Wars fans is what we are.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, that's that. You know, and now they're doing it for Aliens, which I'm like,
Yeah.
I was like, you know, LV-426, April 26th. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. I can't get behind that. And then they're
bit
like,
of a stretch.
And then they're like, oh, well, we're going to be showing double features of Alien and Aliens that day. And I'm like, oh, sold. I'm there.
Yeah. Well, there's a rumor, too, that the Reeboks, they're going to offer them.
Oh, yeah. No, they are.
For a limited time.
They are coming out. Yeah.
I kind of might need to buy some.
Under normal circumstances, you know that I would, right? Because
Yes, I do.
They just look so goofy.
They do. I just want to celebrate the fact that Reebok is actually still in existence, because
that means they might release the pumps from Star Trek V. That's what you're thinking?
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
I did. I'm wearing right now. I just got them. They're on my feet as we speak. I finally found a pair of Air Trainer 3s, and in a color scheme that I like. Then they're black and gray and white, which are White Sox colors. And the Air Trainer 3s are the shoes which were modified into the boots for Michael Keaton's Batman costume in 1989.
What?
Yeah. So I finally have.
I know exactly what those look like. I can picture them in my eye. My mind's eye.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. So I've got Batman's shoes now, finally. But I don't think I can go with Ripley's. Although last year they did re-release her watch. I was really tempted to get that watch, but it was like $300, and I'm like, I don't think I can justify that. But
no,
you know,
no. If I can't justify $100-something Han Solo jacket, you can't justify that.
I am considering that belt, though. Did you see that belt? His Bespin belt.
No, I didn't.
It's only $60, which to me, I mean, I've bought like two belts in the span of like the past 10 years.
See, the thing is, what keeps me financially stable is I've actually raised my oldest to be my sanity check.
Oh.
We went to a book fair, and they had like, it's like a kid's book fair, but then they have like a little Star Wars stand. I'm like, oh, hey, girls, come on over here. I'm gonna check this out. And they have like these, you know, car stickers and everything. And I'm like, I'm picking up this BB-8 sticker. I'm like, I don't know, I could put this on my car. And my oldest, who, God bless her, I've trained her right. She looks at me, she frowns a little bit. She goes, you don't need that, Daddy. I was like, thank you, honey. You've been my sanity check. So I'll show her a picture of that belt, and she'll go, you don't need that.
It's a pretty cool-looking belt, though, I have to say. So
I know it is. I know it's a pretty cool-looking belt. But if they re-release Luke's Bespin jacket, well, not his Bespin fatigue jacket, that would be highly tempting for me, because that's a styling jacket.
I got one of those when I was in high school. I still have it hanging up in my thing. Yeah, I wore the hell out of that, but... See, I like the belt because it's something which is like, I mean, this is my thing, you know, practical cosplay, everyday cosplay. Like, I can wear that belt to work, right?
Well, the best thing is I can tell you that I dress like Vin Diesel every single day.
Yeah.
Because I always wear a tank top under my dress shirt. So when I, you know, when I come home and I sit down to dinner, you know, I can just have my tank top on and just talk about family.
And
so,
and your family's like, you look just like Vin Diesel, right?
Well, it depends on if they're happy with me that day.
Yeah. That's cool. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, yes, we were talking about how, yes, for First Contact Day.
Yes.
Justin Lin is like, happy First Contact Day on his blog. He's like, happy First Contact Day. Here's a picture that we took on the first day of filming with me and two of my favorite people to work with and in costume. And they're full alien makeup. You can't tell who the people are underneath, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, the first person to correctly name who these two people are will receive a prize pack with a crew t-shirt and a poster signed by, you know, me and everything. And so, of course, everyone's like, well, who are those people, right? And I assumed that the one guy, the guy on the left, was definitely Sung Kang. You know, just, I mean, it just, before I even saw the picture, I'm like, one of these dudes is Sung Kang, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the other person, I didn't know. It was a really, really big guy, so I just assumed it was Vin Diesel. He did say that there are people who he's worked with before. But looking at it after seeing other people's responses, Kim Cold seems to be the most likely choice, who's an actor who we will see next week in Furious 6. But I think, I mean, some people are saying Danny Pudi or, you know, whoever. I mean, you know, various people throwing out various names, you know. But I really do think it's Sung Kang. It just makes sense.
It would make sense, especially because he said something about it being, you know, people he'd worked with before. And it's like Sung Kang just makes, I think you're right. It just makes too much sense for one of them.
It does. I mean, and you look at the face, you know, and everything, and you can see it underneath in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, just like, I mean, you look at Kim Cold and this guy and you look at kind of like his jaw structure or whatever. And it definitely looks like that could be him, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I really do think that it is Sung Kang, which is awesome. It is awesome.
It is. And, you know, and that's a guy, I'd like to see him get more headliner roles in things. You know, like, he's a guy that has a very natural charm that I think could very easily be translated. Like, he's the type of guy where you see him in this movie. Like, he has such an easy charm that, like, I would want to see a movie starring him. Just somebody that, like, even if it's a rom, like, I don't like going to rom-coms, but if he were the lead in a rom-com, I'd go see it because I know I'd enjoy his character. Like, it would be somebody that I could dig.
Yeah. I mean, he should really be in everything, you know? He should really be in everything. And, you know, I think we talked about this before, but, you know, now that thanks to, I think, largely this movie right here, Fast Five, the Fast and Furious franchise is huge. It's absolutely huge. Mm-hmm. And it being a franchise and it being Hollywood, of course, they're talking about now growing the Fast and Furious cinematic universe, you know, and doing spin-off movies and stuff like that about individual characters and everything, which you can totally do since there's so many, as we're seeing right here in this thing. And, you know, something which a lot of people have suggested, you know, and I'm right there, you know, with them, is, you know, a Han and Giselle adventure movie.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, come on.
Sold 100 times. I'm going to the Thursday previews for that one.
Yep. That would be the best. That'd be the best.
Yeah.
And the two of them, I mean, that to me is like the highlight of this movie. As much as I love everything in here, you know, Han and Giselle, you know, Sung Kang and Gal Gadot together in this movie, I think are fantastic. So
I agree. They have a great on-screen chemistry. Absolutely.
Yep. All right. So any final thoughts on Fast Five?
If you're not watching the series by now, why aren't you? Watch it. Watch along with me. Have fun.
Exactly. This is the one that I was really, really, really looking forward to and seeing it again. I think it's amazing. And I mean, without getting into any spoilers, I guess, one last thing that we should talk about is the credit cookie, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes. I'm so glad you gave me a heads up about that, too.
Yeah.
Because you like that credit cookie is pretty amazing.
Yeah. I remember like sitting in the theater. I remember watching the movie. I remember watching it in theater number 5 at the Lake and, you know, screening it ahead of time or whatever. And I remember Max was upstairs and he's like, he was doing other work. And I'm like, I'm going to watch this. This is what I'm going to do. And I came out of it and I'm like, that was pretty good. And then I saw the credit cookie and I'm like, oh my God. And like, I ran upstairs and I'm like, you'll never believe what I just saw. I'm like, I don't even care about this franchise. And I was just completely blown away by this credit cookie. And like, I would always go into the theater whenever, you know, the movie was ending, just so that I could see the reaction of the audience as they were experiencing it. And because it is pretty amazing for a lot of reasons. You know?
Yes, it is.
I mean, there's the reveal. There's the big reveal, right? Where it's like, oh, which we won't get into, you know? But the thing that which really, you know, really, like, to me, got me really excited was the appearance of another character who I guess we can say, because it's whatever, Eva Mendes.
Right.
Because I'm like, she was in Too Fast, Too Furious. Oh, yes.
They truly did get everybody back.
Yep.
Except the people who had died.
Yes. And even some of them. So
even some of them, yeah.
Except for that guy from Tokyo Drift. They didn't get him back.
Oh, yeah. No,
but
not him.
But that's too... Well, but it takes place before that, so...
Yes.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I don't know. I love that. That's one of my all-time favorite credit cookies. For sure, of anything.
Oh yeah, no. I I should have expected it, but as I've said, I'm watching this on the bus ride home on my iPad, and I'm sitting there and I'm giggling and like I'm just sitting there in my seat giggling and people occasionally casting a sidelong glance, but when the credit cookie came up, like I actually had an intake. I was like, oh, no, like, and I was like, oh right, I'm in public, so
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty cool for sure. And Eva Mendes is another person who they've talked about. I think there's actually rumors going around that she is one of the people who they're talking about giving their own movie when they do these standalone
things. Watch that. Sure.
Yeah. 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 She's great. All right. Well, okay. Before we go, just one last thing. I just want to give people a heads up, a reminder, or whatever. Outlander. Ron Moore's television show is back for season 2. You can, if you subscribe to Stars or have the Stars mobile app thing, which you can subscribe to or whatever, you can watch the season premiere right now, even though it technically doesn't premiere until, well, tomorrow, based on when this is coming out. And it's a really, really good show. You haven't seen it, have you?
No, I haven't watched 1 minute.
Yeah, really good show. I mean, for people who don't know, Ron Moore is the showrunner, and Ira Stephen Bear is his number one, and it's pretty great to see these two guys, just go to town along with the rest of the writing staff on a weekly basis, and do stuff which they could never do even on Deep Space Nine because it's R-rated. So. They can do whatever they want, and believe me, you think that Deep Space Nine is dark. Yeah, check out the last few episodes of season 1 of Outlander. Oh my God! But yeah, really, really strong, and it's back. So yeah, definitely check it out. I think even if you don't get Stars, a lot of the cable providers are doing a free preview this week. Or this weekend, so check it out for sure.
Is it the type of show somebody could plug into without having seen the first season?
I imagine that you could, because one of the interesting things that they're doing this season, and it's based on a series of books, so like season 2 is going to be basically book 2, but it's almost like a relaunch in terms of the style and everything, because now they've progressed on their journey to a different place, you know. So now, whereas the first season took place, you know, in the Highlands of Scotland and whatever, this new season is going to be like in Paris, you know. So they've talked a lot about how like the look of the show has completely changed. There's a whole new set of characters and everything because they've moved on to a different part of their lives, essentially, you know.
Okay.
But I would recommend watching season one first because, I mean, come on, you know. Why not?
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah, check that out. All right. Well, it's been fun talking about Fast Five this week, but that's not all that we're talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Women at Warp.
She kind of handed down this big image of Uhura to me before I even kind of saw the show. And so before I got the chance to think that she was kind of a rock star, I already thought she was a rock star.
Melodic Treks.
Do you know what lesson I got from this?
What?
Don't rely on technology to solve all of your problems.
What does that mean?
It means don't play on your iPad all the time.
That's what my teacher told me.
Your teacher's very smart.
Saturday Morning Trek.
Dorothy had a little bit of a fit with the animators. They had said over and over again, there is no moon in the Vulcan sky.
I think it was like the first episode that aired of the original series when they mentioned this, because Uhura walks up to Spock and she's like, tell me I'm beautiful. Tell me that I would look good in your moon. And he's like, Vulcan has no moon. I'm not surprised.
Continuing mission.
Another great thing is when it's all finished and you look at it and go, yeah, we made that together. Yeah, that's one of the greatest moments. And people respond to it and say, oh, that's pretty well made. The effects are great. The actors are great, even though they're Dutch trying to speak English, right?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So be sure to check out these shows. You can find them wherever you get your podcasts. You know, you can go to iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone. You can go to SoundCloud. You can go download them right from our website. Whatever you want. Check it out. Yeah, they're there. They're there. They're ready. They're waiting to be listened to right now.
Yes. Go. Don't wait. Rush.
Yeah, and if you go to iTunes and you listen to it there, leave us a review because that helps us out. It helps other people find the show. We like hearing, you know, feedback and everything. That's always beneficial to us. You can change the course of our show for the last three episodes. You really can. You know, if we hear the right thing, you know, from the right person, it could blow our minds. And
to quote Cybok, the power was within you.
Right. Yeah. If we come back next week and we're like, we're not talking about Furious Six anymore. I know that was the plan from the beginning, but no, you know, we have something completely different to talk about because this person said this one sentence to us, you know, on iTunes.
You can be the lever that changes the course of the boulder that is the world of commentary Trek stars.
So yeah, leave us a review. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
You can also
make it crazy.
Other ways that you can get in touch with us would be on the Babel Conference, which is our listener forum on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com and type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and you can find us right there. You can tell us what you think about Fast Five and who you think that person is in the picture that Justin Lin posted and what you think about Outlander and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can find us as a network on Twitter at TrekFM, Trek.fm is also on Facebook and everything like that. And yeah, where can people find you, John?
Oh, I think by this point they've all figured out they can find me on Twitter at Kessel Junkie. And you can also find me on another podcast called Words with Nerds that I co-host with my pal Craig. And you can find me on the podcast Aggressive Negotiations, which is a Star Wars-focused podcast that I co-host with Trek FM's own Matthew Rushing.
I'm surprised you haven't done an emergency podcasting session to talk about the new trailer for Rogue One.
Emergency sessions are handled by the nerd party as a whole, but we'll have a few things to say about it. I can guarantee. And actually, I'll go ahead and say that sneak preview. There will be a 602 Club topic which will incorporate discussions about the Rogue One trailer.
Nice.
Coming up.
I don't really have anywhere to talk about it, so I'm just going to say it's badass. I loved it so much.
I'm just going to say you want to know what really warmed my heart. Now the trailer as a whole is brilliant and wonderful. Do you know what the small attention to detail was that made me as a geek, especially a Star Wars geek, go absolutely through the roof with joy?
What's that?
The Star Destroyers are bone white.
Uh-huh.
Which the coloration of the Star Destroyers changed from episode 4 to episode 5. And as did the models. And I haven't done a side by side to see if the thickness is the same as the episode 4 Star Destroyer, because they got thicker when you got to episode 5. But the fact that the coloration is bone white, which is what it should be in that era, that makes me very happy. That makes me look at it and go, that is a filmmaker that is a Star Wars fan like I am.
It'll be interesting to see whether or not Darth Vader's helmet will have a matte finish or a glossy finish.
It will be interesting also to see if it's symmetrical, because it was not symmetrical before episode 3.
Yep, you're right.
But there's so much about that trailer that's really cool. And just, you know,
I mean, aside from all of it,
yeah,
I think that this could very well, I mean, just looking at that, you know, minute and a half or whatever it is, I think this could very well end up being the best looking Star Wars movie in history.
I can tell you that I don't disagree with you. but I can also tell you that what's very interesting is this movie is, of course, a big exercise in fan service in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing illustrated that to me better than when I showed it to my daughters, who really loved episode 7. And when I showed it to them, both of them, they saw it independently. Both of them sort of like crinkled their nose at one point. And especially the oldest went, wait a minute, which one was Rey? I go, no, this isn't Rey, honey. This is before. She goes, but where's Rey then? And I'm like, well, Rey hasn't been born yet, honey. And she goes, oh, well, where's Finn? And I go, Finn's not around yet either. And like her excitement level muted very visibly at that point, where she was like, oh, okay. I think they got a hard sell getting the non-fans into the theater for this one.
That may be, but then again, you know, after seeing this movie, just looking at this thing, I can imagine like Felicity Jones will be the new, I mean, oh my God.
Yeah.
She looks so awesome in this, you know. I'm just waiting. I'm waiting. I'm seeing how long it's going to take Ripped Apparel to come out with a I Rebel T-shirt, you know, because I will totally buy that.
This will be the first place. I have absolutely no authority or anything. This podcast will be the first the public time I ever admit to my theory that the guy you see smirk at her and then you see later walking with her, I'm willing to lay odds that that's Poe Dameron's dad.
You think
so? He looks like Oscar Isaac a little bit.
Okay.
And maybe I'm going out on a limb, but I want to be on the record as soon as possible to say that's my theory.
Doesn't everyone else think it's Biggs?
No, that's not Biggs. There's no mustache.
Okay, maybe I'm thinking of Diego.
And actually,
Luna.
Actually, at this point, Biggs probably would have been. I mean, the thing is,
About the guy who looks just like Biggs, like Diego Luna, right?
Oh no! I'm okay. Not talking about the guy I'm talking about didn't have a mustache.
Okay,
and he smirks at her at one point.
I guess I'm
no, but the thing is, I'm not entirely certain if Biggs has left the Rand Ecliptic by this point in the timeline or not, because Biggs went to the Academy and then he jumped ship. He jumped ship from the Rand Ecliptic. This is the established. They may change this. I don't know.
Man.
But it's always been established that he was on the Rand Ecliptic, and then he jumped off. When he went back to talk to Luke on Tatooine, is where a lot of this was established. Of course, it never made it to the final film, so then there's always the debate about, well, is it you know, canon or not? Radio drama is decidedly not canon, though, because they are walking all over it on this one.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, be interesting to see. I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited. Oh my God, it looks so good. I mean, like this could be better than episode 7. You know, I mean, it really could.
I will be so bold as to say that visually, this to me will feel more like this minute and a half looks more like a Star Wars movie to me than the first trailer for episode 7 did.
And yet it looks like its own thing. It's not mimicking the style, like photographically or whatever. And shot with those 70mm anamorphic lenses that Tarantino used on Hateful Eight. So,
and I saw you talking on Twitter about masking and aspect ratios and ovals in the background that maybe should be
circles. And you were saying that we were nerds, and you're talking about the Rand eclipse, and I'm like, okay.
Rand ecliptic.
Because see, like, I hear that. Like, and my reaction to you saying that we're nerds is exactly the same. Like I saw some people talking about it on the Babel conference, and they're like, I really hope that this person is this person here. And I'm like, you guys are such nerds.
All I care about is whether the Star Destroyer is the right color and shade of white.
Yeah,
that's what's important.
That's extremely nerdy, you know? And I mean,
whole movie's ruined if that's not done right.
Granted, you know, I'm talking about lenses and crap and whether it's going to be in 2.76 or 2.39 or whether or not it's going to be matte. You know, I guess that's nerdy as well.
This is one where I'm traipsing out to the IMAX theater for the first showing.
See?
Because that's where I have my shot at seeing laser projection 70mm.
Okay. Well, it's not going to be in 70mm. It won't be.
What?
Well, they're not even shooting it in 70mm. They're shooting it digitally, but with 70mm lenses.
Okay.
So, but, you know, with the IMAX thing, to me, especially if it's in 2.76, it's going to be like, wow, well, that's even more pointless for IMAX because it's going to be even smaller on the IMAX screen, you know? But, you know, I don't know. But the laser, that might be. And I think 3D is the way to go for this one. So, whatever.
No.
I do. But
no,
I honestly do.
3D is never the right choice. Never, ever.
It can be. I hear Jungle Book. Everyone's saying Jungle Book is the best 3D since Avatar. So,
well, I certainly hope it's a better movie than Avatar.
I highly doubt that, but I guess we'll find out.
I think that the odds are in its favor, to be honest with you.
Avatar's good. I love Avatar. It's good.
It's okay at best.
Anyway, well, if you're looking for me, if you want to talk to me about, if you want, that's where you can find John if you want to talk to him about Star Destroyer color. If you want to talk to me about lenses.
Yes.
Or like oval flares versus spherical flares or whatever. You can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K, and you can also find me here on Trek FM producing From There to Here, the podcast where we look at an episode of Star Trek every day, or two episodes every day for the entire year. And we're just finishing up the animated series, and we're going to be heading into the movies and Next Generation really soon.
Yeah.
I was just editing our discussion on the movies today, so yeah, it's coming
looking
fast.
Forward I am no to quote Gorkon, then I will look forward to that. That was a terrible Gorkon impression. Why am I even on this show?
You know, it's okay. Yeah. All right, before we go, you can help us out by buying some of our stuff on our store on Redbubble. If you just go to trek.fm, there's a link to the promenade, the Trek FM promenade, which has various things with various artwork on there, and it's all very spiffy and cool. So be sure to check that out. And you can also help us out by going to patreon.com/trekfm and supporting us with a donation. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And it's basically like, you know, Kickstarter, but on a monthly basis. And, you know, the money that you donate there will help us with the costs of, you know, storage and bandwidth and equipment and all those other things necessary for putting out this here podcast. So, help us out if you can. All right. Well, we've only got one more movie, one more thing, one more work by a Star Trek creator to cover before we start wrapping this thing up. Furious 6.
Thank you.